From the Latin de Grand Theatre of our city in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of March, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Today, President Trump imposed aluminum and steel tariffs across the board on many countries. Canada and Europe have both responded, and the marketplace has moved sharply lower. We'll hear about that with Greg Johnson from TGM. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner, and we'll have a final update on crop insurance decisions during this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day settled at 460 and three quarters, down 9.5 cents. July at 467 and a half, 9.5 lower. December down 6.25. Settlement price there at 448 and a quarter. May beans at $10.5, down 10.75. July 10.15 and a half, a dime lower. And November beans at 10.06 and a half, down 9 cents. Bean meal $1.60 lower. The bean oil off 25 cents. Soft red winter wheat down 2.75. The hard red down a penny, rather up a penny for the day. And the live cattle futures were up $1.85. Feeders $3.25 higher. Greg Johnson with Total Grain Marketing, that's TGM, the elevator system here in Illinois, parts of Indiana, and the elevator in Champaign County now joins us. Thank you, Greg, for being with us. As you and I are talking, the markets are down hard. This is before the close, so things may have changed, but at least at this point, they're down hard and probably will be typical of the volatility in trade that we can look forward to through the rest of this marketing year, and I suppose maybe the next one too. What's happening in the marketplace today?
Well, from a fundamental point of view, there's very little new news. The trade is a little disappointed that USDA in their monthly supply and demand report on Tuesday did not increase ethanol exports or corn exports. But USDA said that they are taking into account trade issues when estimating future export demand. So with all the uncertainty with trade talks and tariffs and whatnot, that's probably understandable that they did not increase corn or ethanol exports. Today, macroeconomic issues are taking front and center stage, trade tensions primarily. The tariffs that U.S. announced would take effect on steel and aluminum from Canada took effect at midnight today, at last night, so those are now into effect. And Canada has announced retaliation. They said that they will put a 25% tariff on more than $20 billion worth of U.S. goods in retaliation for the tariffs that went into effect overnight, and that they could put more on at some point in time. And of course, the U.S. said, well, if you put more on, then we may increase our tariffs to 50%. So, you know, we're in the midst of this tit for tat, back and forth, you know, tariff trade war, basically, is what it is. Potential trade war. I hope it doesn't last or come to fruition, but that's what the market is worried about. And it's not just commodities. The stock market is down hard. The NASDAQ is down double digits since the first of the year. The Dow is down over 8% since the first of the year. Corn is down over 11% since the February highs. Beans are down 8% since the February highs. So it's a broad-based sell-off in both stocks and commodities.
Yeah, just a point of clarification. So the USDA yesterday said what was in place, it was taken into account. There were some things that were already in place, but the new tariffs imposed today by both the U.S. and Canada would not have shown up in yesterday's figures. That brings me to why corn is down so hard. Do we know if Canada is retaliating with a tariff on ethanol imported from the United States? I would suppose that's probably one of the bigger reasons, if that's the case, or maybe it's just speculation still at this point.
I think it's still speculation, but I think they've said that they are going to target commodities that will hurt Trump's voter base. And so the Midwest is a strong supporter of Trump. And so ethanol would obviously be a logical choice. So I don't think that's been made public yet, but certainly stands to reason that that's something that they would consider targeting.
How do you suppose producers should think about the volatility today and that that we will see going forward?
Well, we've lost 60 cents in the corn, so I think the horse is out of the barn as far as that's concerned. Could we go, you know, another 20 cents lower? I suppose we could, but we've got the whole growing season ahead of us. There's still forecast of dry weather. We're certainly going to start off on the dry side. So demand out of Mexico is still very good. South America is 2 to 3 weeks behind on their double crop corn planting. So there's potentially bullish things out there. I think there is a story for corn. So at this point, since the market sold off 60 cents on corn, I think it's probably prudent to be patient and wait and see what happens. And hopefully we get some kind of a resolution to either the trade talks or we have some weather problems on down the road. And then other countries will be forced to buy regardless of the price or regardless of their political expectations. So at this point, I think we just need to be patient. But in the big picture, I think, you know, the corn story is a little bit better than the bean story. So if beans would rally and get back up above, you know, that midpoint level of 10 1/4 November futures, probably wouldn't be a bad place to start being a little bit more aggressive and get beans sold.
Just remind us of the fundamentals that make the corn picture a little better than the soybean picture.
The trend has narrowed up. We've gone from a 2.1, 2.2 billion bushel carryout, and every month for the last 5, 6, 7 months, we've taken 100 million off of that to the point where we're now at 1.54, and that number stayed unchanged. So we didn't technically lower the carryout, but we certainly didn't increase it either. So we took a pause this month, and we'll see what happens next month. But the trend has been narrowing up, and we've had demand for corn, whereas soybeans, not as much demand. We know that China, you know, and we haven't even talked about China's trade war problems with the U.S., but we know China is probably going to buy as many beans as they can from South America. South America's crop continues to get bigger. And even though the U.S. ending stocks number is relatively the same for corn and beans, if you look at the world stocks number, world stocks ending stocks for soybeans is over 30%, whereas corn, it's only around 20%. So I think there's a better story for corn. Any kind of a hiccup as far as production probably would affect the corn price a little bit more dramatically than it would soybeans.
And finally, I know you've talked about this in past, but the export window for U.S. soybeans, because of a large crop coming out of South America, maybe a little bit later too, gets smaller this year than it has been in some previous years.
That's right. South America, Brazil primarily, got their beans planted later. Which obviously doesn't affect their production. They can plant beans late and still have a good crop. It's they're all growing during the rainy season. It does potentially impact their corn, you know, because it will be pollinated and filling during more of the dry season. But what it does do with soybeans, since they planted them later, they will be harvesting them later and they will be exporting them later. And so a lot of times they'll be done exporting in October and we'll have that October-November window to ourselves for exports. Well, this year, South America could very easily still be exporting into October, and our window may not start until November or December. So with beans being harvested here in the U.S. in September and October, if we don't have an export window, that's not good. Basis levels may reflect that by being really weak during that September-October timeframe until demand starts showing up.
Thank you much, Greg. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM. That's Total Grain Marketing. If you'd like to learn more about the South American crop season and hear some updates about the soybeans, corn, and export markets, we'll do that tomorrow with the Farm Doc team at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. There is a webinar then with Joanna Colucci and a colleague of hers from the National Institute of Agricultural Technology in Argentina. By the way, CONAB, Brazil's counterpart to USDA, will update its figures tomorrow morning, and we'll have those on our website at willag.org early. This quick note on crop insurance. The deadline for the decisions is approaching for corn acres revenue protection, or RP, with high coverage levels at 80 or 85% is recommended by the Ag Economist at the University of Illinois, along with considering the enhanced coverage option, or ECO, says Gary Schnitke.
We would recommend that, like they have done in the past, farmers take RP at a high coverage level. Most Illinois farmers in northern and central Illinois take that at 80 and 85%. That would be a good place to be. And then think about ECO on top of that. If they want to, and ECO is county level coverage from 90 to 95% down to 86%. And you, if you're concerned about lower revenues, that would be a good alternative this year. And just consider it. That's not a firm recommendation, just consider it.
The Farm Doc team also analyzed the supplemental coverage option, or SCO. They wrote in the Farm Doc Daily article this week that because our county is likely to provide higher payments this season, it's probably best to skip SCO in most circumstances. Our county is the recommended choice for corn and soybean base acres due to its higher expected returns compared to PLC. While SCO is an option, historical experience suggests limited payments in Illinois, making our county a more reasonable farm safety net choice. Again, farmers should consider higher crop insurance coverage levels this season at 80 or 85%, possibly pairing it with ECO coverage to 95%. The crop insurance decisions are due within the next few days. The ARC PLC decision is due in mid-April. Up next, sometimes in rural America, the grocery store is really far away, and it may not be easy for some to get to. Largely, this is due in part to the disappearance of independent grocery stores in small towns. To push back against this trend, more states have created grant programs to support small grocers. As Harvest Public Media's Rachel Kramer reports, the stores are part of the backbone of many rural communities.
In the back room at Wood Supermarket in Delhi, Kent Wood and his son pull the plastic away from a pallet stacked with boxes. One contains bottles of ketchup, others hold canned soup and pasta.
04512.
While unloading, they call out numbers printed on each box to check off inventory.
And then a 21.
On truck delivery days, Kent gets here at 4:30 a.m.
I wouldn't come to work and work as many hours as I do if I didn't like it.
Wood Supermarket in Delhi sits in front of a grain elevator in Pocahontas, a town of about 1,800 people in northwest Iowa. While a few dollar stores sell food, this is the only grocery store in town. Kent's wife and store co-owner, Kim Wood, says the closest alternatives are outside the county lines, about 20 to 30 minutes away.
Yeah, the elderly population, especially in the wintertime, they don't want to drive out of town to get groceries, and I think that would be a hardship.
Rural policy experts say grocery stores are vital for communities to thrive, but the number of rural independent grocery stores in the U.S. has steadily declined in recent decades. To help reverse this trend, half a dozen states, including Illinois, Minnesota, North Dakota, and Oklahoma, have passed legislation in recent years to develop grant programs for grocers. Now, lawmakers in Iowa and Nebraska are pushing to create their own versions. Jillian Linster is the Senior Director of Policy at the Center for Rural Affairs. The organization is advocating for both bills.
Our staff live and work in the communities that we serve. And so we were seeing in our everyday lives that more and more stores were closing or struggling to stay open.
A recent study found the number of rural independent grocery stores in Nebraska declined by 30% from 2016 to 2021.
Rural independent grocers are operating on extremely slim profit margins, sometimes as little as 1%.
Competition with dollar stores and supercenters in the region are one of the biggest challenges for independent grocers. Fewer customers from population loss, rising operating costs, and aging equipment are also factors. Chad Engels is one of the Republican representatives who introduced the Grocer Reinvestment Bill in Iowa. During a noisy subcommittee meeting, he said a grant program could make a big difference for mom-and-pop grocery stores.
And I hear from all of them, we're just one freezer breakdown, one cooler breakdown from shutting the door.
While the Nebraska and Iowa bills are slightly different, they both aim to help rural independent grocers pay for things like new equipment and utility upgrades. Funds from the Nebraska program could also be used to explore new business models, like purchasing cooperatives. This is something Liz Ravenscroft says she wants to explore if the grant program gets off the ground.
The problem with our remote location is we are unable to sell a minimum amount that certain companies require for groceries.
She manages Circle C Market, a nonprofit grocery store affiliated with a school in Cody, Nebraska. Population 170. Ravenscroft says some of their customers come from an hour away to buy milk, bread, and other essentials. By creating a purchasing cooperative with other retailers in North Central Nebraska, Ravenscroft says they could order directly from a wholesaler and pass savings on to customers.
You know, we're always looking for ways to get groceries at a more affordable cost for our customers. That's the bottom line.
Ravenscroft, also a full-time business teacher, says managing Circle C Market requires a lot of time. But it's a labor of love. She wants to support her community. In the break room at Woods Supermarket and Deli in Pocahontas, Kent and Kim Woods say the same thing. Many of their customers are people they've known for decades. When one had a health issue recently, they helped out by delivering her groceries.
I mean, that's what you do in a small town. You look out for each other. No.
Rural advocates in Iowa and Nebraska say it makes sense for states to look after small town grocers in return. I'm Rachel Kramer, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a collaboration of public media newsrooms in the Midwest and Great Plains. Let's check the global growing regions to see how the weather is impacting crops in them. We're now joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thank you so much for being with us today. However, you're in Canada again today?
I am. I'm a long way from the U.S. I'm in a place called Grand Prairie, Alberta, which is along the British Columbia border with Alberta, and it's about a couple hours north of the U.S. border. So it's about as far away from you as we've been in a while.
Are you in canola or soybean country there?
This is canola country.
Yeah, so they probably have been talking about tariffs because the Chinese just imposed tariffs. That will be problematic for them. I want you to focus not on that part, but on the weather. They have had dry conditions there over the past couple of years. Maybe reframe that slightly for me and then build that into what you see in the western part of the United States, particularly the Corn Belt for the coming season.
Yeah, well, up in Canada, you're right. There has been a multi-year drought that has impacted production. They seem to have done relatively well. Probably out of the last 4 or 5 years, they've had two bad years because of the drought. But they've managed to eke out a crop. Just like our farmers, they can do miracles up there when they're up against the fence like this. You're right about the tariffs, and they're very concerned about that. The price of canola has fallen out of bed here recently because of the Chinese tariffs. And so there's a lot of nervousness up there, but everybody says they're going to stick pretty close to what their planting rotations are, just because they have to rotate around in order to protect their soils and whatnot. So it sounds like it's going to be status quo, but they're very concerned about the prices, of course, that they're going to get, and their expenses are going through the roof because of all that's going on. Now, the dryness that's been ongoing in Western Canada may be breaking down in this growing season ahead, and so might it be in the western part of the United States. I'm talking now the far western states. In the Midwest, the key corn and soybean producing areas, you know, we've got a lot of dryness that's still hanging on in the Great Plains and parts of the upper Midwest, portions of the Western Corn Belt. We've had a little bit of timely relief, but it hasn't really soaked down deep in the ground. And all we need here is about a week or 10 days of really warm, dry weather, and talking about April or May type weather where we get the 70s and even some 80s. Without any rain, and that dryness is going to come to the top so very, very quickly. And so I don't think we want to turn our backs on that. The upper air wind flow pattern right now is not supporting any big storm system coming in that would soak down the plains or the western fringes of the Corn Belt. Little systems, yes, but big systems, probably not. Now, we do have one storm system coming up here in the next couple of days. It'll be pretty impressive. Wind blower for the hard red winter wheat country. We'll probably see 60 to 80 mile an hour winds in some places there. But the humidity is going to be 10 to 25%. That's not going to do that crop any good. And temperatures have been in the 70s and 80s the past couple of days. They'll fall back into the 20s briefly over the weekend and then back into the 70s and 80s next week. So that's not real good for a crop that's already been beat up by January freezes without snow on the ground. You get a little bit more into corn and soybean country, and some of that dryness is definitely out there. We still have moisture deficits in Iowa and parts of Minnesota, and certainly neighboring areas in the Dakotas. There'll be a blizzard in the eastern Dakotas and Minnesota on Friday into Saturday. It'll help a little bit, but it's not a fix-all. So we're going to continue watching everything that's going on in the states. The eastern Midwest will stay plenty wet, especially the Tennessee River Basin area up into Ohio and Indiana. We're expecting a lot of wild weather there, a lot of rain, and some severe thunderstorms coming up here Friday into Saturday.
Turn your attention to South America. Begin in Brazil with the second crop or safrina corn and prospects for it.
Well, Mato Grosso is the number one safrina corn producing state in Brazil, and they did report on March 9th that they had 7% of their crop still left to be put into the ground. And I'm still looking at 20 to 25% of the overall safrina corn crop. It got planted quite late. And at the moment, everything's fine in Brazil. The moisture profile in Mato Grosso and neighboring states to the south is really favorably rated. We're a little dry when you get down into Paraná and parts of Sao Paulo, but I think those areas will get some timely rain in the next couple of weeks, and then they're going to see some really normalish weather conditions for corn development. But Mato Grosso will continue to be favorably moist. The monsoon doesn't end until we get to mid-April in most years. And producers are just hoping that it continues to rain fairly frequently. Even if they don't get that last little percentage of corn planted, they're more concerned about running out of moisture and the monsoon ending too soon than they're worried about what's left to be planted. It's imperative that they keep that moisture profile pretty darn full as we get to the end of the monsoon season, because this crop that was planted late will be dependent upon that subsoil moisture to carry them through reproduction, which for this late crop, it's going to be May and probably into early June when the crop is filling. So they're going to need all the help that they can get. So I'm not ready to say they're going to have a wonderful crop, but for the next few weeks, they're going to do all right. After that, it's going to be up to temperatures and what's left in the soil moisture-wise.
How are the full-season corn and soybean crops in Argentina doing?
Yeah, you know, they turned the corner here a few weeks ago, and it started raining fairly often. We saturated the soil in the past couple of weeks. But that was okay for late season crops. It did have a negative impact on sunseed quality in Argentina and delays in harvest of that crop. But that's probably the only negative impact. Most of the late season crops were still in the very end of reproduction and filling when the rains came along, and it probably helped the yields out a little bit. Now we're looking at a week's worth of dry weather and temperatures that are going to be mostly seasonable, and so it looks pretty good. I really don't see many problems in the near term in either Brazil or Argentina.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Yep, have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.